This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Crossed Up. I'm Bob Wankel, sitting here in southern New Jersey on a rainy 50-degree day. And we have Anthony Sanfilippo here. And as I'm talking to him, I see Anthony. I see the sunshine behind him. I don't know how warm it is, but it looks pretty damn nice. I hear birds chirping from Clearwater.
I'm wearing a t-shirt, Bob. That's all you need to know. I'm sitting on an enclosed porch, or it is enclosed, but it's screens behind me, wearing a t-shirt, drinking my OJ. Like, it's a beautiful, beautiful morning here in southwestern Florida.
I love that for you. I don't love it for me, but we do have a lot to talk about here. We did not record last week. Schedules didn't quite sync up, but we're back here. And
I blame North Carolina.
Yeah, the state of North
and
Carolina.
And our friend Russ Joy.
Yes, that's fair. Always blame Russ.
Those are the two reasons. Always find a reason to blame Russ.
Yeah.
And there's two. Those are the two reasons we didn't record last week.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have a lot to talk about here. We have the Zach Wheeler extension, biggest extension for a player that's already got a year left or more on a contract in the history of baseball, or at least I guess for pitchers. You know, this team, we're looking at these games, and I think you've probably got a little bit more of a sense of who's performing and what is happening on the field. I told you a week and a half ago that I didn't care what happened on the field as long as everybody stayed healthy. I still don't care. You know, so I think we have to talk about a lot of off the field things and roster construction things and really look at how this team sets up with the opening day about 3 weeks away at this point.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting, Bob, because one of the things we talked about with Wheeler pitched for the first time in a game yesterday at spring training. And he talked about, you know, and we can dive into this. I've actually wrote a little bit about this, but he talked about developing his a splitter, which is something that's new for him this year. I mean, remember last year he incorporated a sweeper for the first time. So that got added to his pitch arsenal. This year, he's working on a splitter. And, you know, he talks about how the plan for spring training is really to you know, work on that pitch a bunch and find the right situations to use it. And, you know, results don't matter. He doesn't care. And his point was, look, I know I have a spot on this team, right? I'm not competing for a job. So the results don't make a difference. Like, I might throw pitches in spots that I won't throw them in the regular season, but I just want to see how this pitch plays in certain spots. And the goal for it is to really throw it against left-handers, because lefties actually hit him a little bit last year. And I was talking to Real Muto yesterday, and he said that the idea is for him to have a pitch that doesn't break in on lefties, because they're basically just sitting there and turning on pitches, you know, against Wheeler. Whereas if this one, you know, everything that he throws, the cutter comes in, the slider sweeper comes in, even the four seamers got a little bit of cut to it. But now all of a sudden you throw a splitter that breaks away from lefties, you're probably going to get a little bit of swing and miss on that. And so like they just want to add to that arsenal and make him an even better pitcher. And he feels like if he can, you know, be better against lefties and still dominate righties the way he does, he could chase a Cy Young. That was an exact quote. He said, I can go get a Cy Young. You know, that was a thing that he said. So if you have that mentality and you're at the top of this rotation, then yeah, you probably deserve $42 million a year for the 3 years after this year, right? And be part of this for four more years. The interesting thing to me about the contract, Bob, and I mentioned this the other day when I wrote about it, is that this might be the last contract for Zach Wheeler. And this is the first sign to this core group of Phillies of an end game, of a date when it starts to break up the core, right? Like, we know Harper's here for a long time. We know Turner's here a long time. We know Nola's here a long time. This is the first one where you sit there and go, that could be the end of the road for a guy. And so like that to me kind of sets a window a little bit. Not to say that they can't be competitive beyond that. They certainly can. You got young kids coming like Andrew Painter and Mick Abel will be ready to go at that point. But the fact of the matter is that we're looking at it and saying, okay, we have Zach Wheeler for 4 more years. That's probably it. You got to try and win with him at the top of your rotation for the in the next 4 years.
Is your expectation that Zach Wheeler is Zach Wheeler at the front end of this contract, at least in 24, 25, 26? Or do you think that they're kind of running a risk here on an overpay and that he could kind of fall off a cliff within the next year or two?
No, I don't think he's there. I mean, the one thing about him is that he's been durable since he's been here, right? I mean, I know he had arm problems when he was in New York, but he's been really durable with the Phillies. And the one thing I could say for the Phillies, I give them a lot of credit with their health people and their medical team and their conditioning people. Knock on wood, their pitchers have avoided major injuries. Andrew Painter aside, right? I mean, that's the only one that, like, you know, but that's because a 19-year-old kid is throwing a ball he probably shouldn't have been throwing, right?
Yeah.
Trying to throw that cutter at 19. But at the same time, these guys have been really durable for the most part, especially at the top of the rotation. And one of the things that Rob Thompson was saying is that just how important it is to have that up there. An even better quote, I was going to reference what Thompson said, but Kyle Schwarber. I was talking to Schwarber in Dunedin, and he said, you kind of forget, and it's kind of forgotten in the sport of baseball, just how valuable it is to have guys who can throw 190 innings or more. He said, there's about 30 innings per guy that most teams don't have that saves the bullpen. Yeah. And he says that gives you an extra 60 innings that the bullpen doesn't have to wear on their shoulders, right? So there's real value to this in a short-term deal. And yeah, you're paying him $42 million, which has only been paid to Otani, Scherzer, and Verlander previously. But the Phillies and Wheeler believe he's the best pitcher in the National League, and they feel like he can win a Cy Young, and they feel that he's worth that based off the fact that it was a friendly deal to begin with, and now they're going to pay him for that going forward.
One of the things, and the last thing I kind of want to talk about with this contract is people were sort of applauding Zach Wheeler for saying, you know, listen, I don't know that I want to pitch 5-6 years from now. So this is sort of what I wanted to do. You get the high AAV. Great. You know, the Phillies don't have to pay this guy for 5 or 6 years. They don't have to worry about taking him into 2029. They don't have to worry about potentially paying a 40-year-old or a 39-year-old big money. This is a win-win, and he deserves, I believe, the money that he is getting on this extension. But there are some skeptics that are saying that this is not exactly the most noble thing. It's basically creating a 3-year opt-out for himself, and if he wants to go back and duplicate the contract and get one more deal, he might be able to do that. And who knows how the economics of the game move between now and then, so he's sort of leaving the window open. I think that Zach Wheeler, from any interaction I've had with him, anytime that I've been around him, he seems like the straightest of shooters. Like, I just don't think that there's any bullshit with Zach Wheeler. I really don't. So while I get the skepticism that, oh, you know, really what he's doing is he's giving himself flexibility to see if he can cash one more time, which he might, and he's entitled to do that, by the way. But I still think it's a positive for the Phillies. Even the most cynical person, I still say it's a win for the Phillies because they're not tied down to it beyond 4 years from now. But I really do think that he meant what he said. In my mind, he's like, this is probably it.
Yeah, I think so too. He's that type of guy, right? He said it in the press conference. He said, I don't want to pitch when I'm old. Well, we don't know what old really is. I mean, what's his definition of that? Right. But he talked about, you know, he just had his third kid, right? He wants to be somebody who's present as a father. For when they're, you know, in their, you know, in their, in certain, at certain ages. And I feel like that's a thing for him. Like, yeah, if you haven't won a World Series in the next 4 years, maybe Zach Wheeler goes, I'll sign a 1-year deal and play it by ear from there. Like, maybe that, but I think that that's, you're not going much longer than this, than this contract. I think that, I think I believe him when he says that, you know, he wants to be done sooner rather than later.
It's really interesting. One other thing and one other thought I had when I heard him say that, I have two kids. They're both under three. One's a year old. The other one's 2.5. And if you would have said to me 4 years ago, would an athlete think about leaving the game in order to be with his family? I'd say, like, it doesn't even make sense. Like, I don't get it. When athletes say, like, oh, I have young kids at home, I want to spend more time with my family. Like, when you don't have children, you don't understand that. You're like, oh, come on, you're playing a game. Ride that thing until the very end. You could be out there 42 years old. As long as somebody's paying you to do it, keep doing it. But it's, like, funny. You know, you have kids all of a sudden. You get a little older. I'm 38 now. I'm not running around being an idiot. And, like, you know, you go away for business. And sometimes, don't get me wrong, it's nice to get away from the family a little bit, just to kind of reset yourself and be a person, be a human being. But, you know, for me, like, I instantly miss them, and I just want to get back to them, right? Yeah. And so I could see that. I could see the toll that it takes from being a father, from being a husband, by not really being around that much. That has to be tough.
Like, he was joking about it a little bit yesterday. But he was serious at the same time. Like, the day his wife Dominique went into labor, he had to throw a bullpen. So he ran her to, he runs her to the hospital, drops her off, says, babe, I'll be right back. Runs over to BayCare, throws a 40-pitch bullpen, and then runs right back to the hospital.
They couldn't have done, like, they couldn't have brought a bullpen catcher out to the hospital with them. Maybe just did some, like, flat ground stuff, maybe, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing. It's like, he's like, he knew he had some experience as being a father previously, that he knew that there was a little bit of time between the time you get into the hospital and the time the baby's delivered, right? So he's like, I can run over real quick and then run back. And so that's what he did. And, you know, he thanks his wife a lot because of that, because, you know, it's not easy. Obviously, you know, imagine your wife being home by herself with two little ones all the time,
yeah,
with not a lot of help, right? I mean, so, you know, he's appreciative of her for all that she's doing. But at the same time, when your husband's making $42 million a year,
million. I think
you can suck it. You can suck it up for a little bit, right?
That out. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You call the nanny and you make it work, I guess. All right. Well,
you know what else? You know what else he did yesterday? Well, one more little tip. I know fans love this nonsense, but the day after the contract, yesterday he buys pregame. This is before the game even starts. He buys the entire team Raising Cane's fried chicken, which I think has now come up to the Philly area. I think that they have one up there now, right? So so they had this spread in the clubhouse. It just fried chicken. There were some Texas toast or something like that, and some French fries. And the boys were just going at it, right? And Wheeler, you know, he's from Georgia, so he loves all that comfort food. He said he wanted to grease them up before the game. So we asked Real Muto after the game if he had any of the chicken, and he said, yeah, it was good. And they said, so, you know, how much did you enjoy it? He goes, I really felt it running from second to home. So, no wonder they didn't hit all that well yesterday against the Orioles.
A little sluggish. Yeah, I could see that.
A little sluggish, thanks to Wheels.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we feel great about Zach Wheeler. It's great that they're not taking this into the season. There's a resolution here. You feel really good, I think, about the Phillies 1-2. As critical as I've been, and I think fairly so to Aaron Nola, I think that I've always been fair. I acknowledge what he is. I get frustrated when he kind of falls short of what I think he can be, lack of consistency, those things. I don't know why, because I think that this team has some issues. I think that this team is going to have a number of challenges. I like it. I think it'll win. I would put the win total somewhere between 90 and 93 is where I'm kind of trending right now, which I know isn't going out on a limb. But I feel great about Aaron Nola for some reason this year. And maybe it's because the contract nonsense is in the past. And I know that we always say he's like a pretty unflappable guy. He's even keel. But I do think, and just kind of talking to him and some of the things that he has said, and as honest as he was after Game 7 of the NLCS last year about his future, there's no doubt in my mind that that took a toll on him. And that when he was maybe not on the mound during his starts, but at different points throughout the season, I think the uncertainty of his future probably did have an impact on him. And you saw the way that he finished the year when he was really able to bear down and dial in. And I just expect that to carry over. Like, I feel like that he's able to sort of close the door on the uncertainty and now look forward and say, this is where I'm going to be. I'm the guy here. You know, Zach and I are the guys. And I just expect him to have that year. I'm not saying he's going to go win Cy Young. I'm not saying his numbers are going to be better than Zach Wheeler's. But I really think that he's going to be the pitcher that the Phillies are paying him to be. And that we're not going to spend the entire season start by start saying, what's wrong with Aaron Nola? Should they have done this deal? Was it a mistake? I just expect the guy to throw the ball really well this year.
Yeah, I do too. I think that figuring out with runners on base, that little mechanical change that they had worked on in August, and it really started to show the fruits of it in September and then into October. I think that that is going to make a big difference for Nola this year. I think that that's really, he's going to cut down on a lot of the mistakes that happened when he had guys, you know, he couldn't hold a runner, they get into scoring position, then he gives up a cheap hit and a run scores, or then he gives up the home run, right? Whatever the case might be. I think Nola's still going to, you know, he's still going to give up his share of home runs just because he's a softer pitcher, but I don't think he's going to have as many guys on base. And so I think that ultimately you're going to see numbers that are more in line with 22 than you will what you saw last year. I think that's more of what you're going
to
see from
you. Go back to the start of last year, and there was so much. There was the blatant admission early, like, hey, I don't like the pitch clock. This is tougher for me. And everyone talked about it. It's harder on him than it is on some other guys. And he was always quick to sort of preface his commentary with, it's not an excuse. I'm trying to make excuses. But even as the season kind of wore on, we got into May, you know, you're seven starts in, and he would kind of just subtly allude to issues with the clock and pacing and with runners on. And you're like, come on, man, like you've got to figure it out. You've got to figure it out.
It wasn't just May, Bob. If you remember the game in June when that got canceled because of the smoke, that was the day I ended up talking to Nola, just me and him on the field for, and we've talked about this on the show, this isn't anything new, but I ended up talking to him on the field for 45 minutes. It was just me and him just BSing about everything. And even then in June, he was complaining about the pitch clock and everything. So, I mean, you were what, like 11, 12 starts into the season at that point, you know, and he was still complaining about it. So, it took a toll on him last year, but I think he finally figured it out.
So, you know me, there's always like the dark cloud off in the distance, right? And so we feel great about Zach Wheeler. We feel great about Aaron Nola. But off in the distance, I see some clouds and I see some uncertainty, and it's kind of headed this way right on this show right now.
Yeah.
I have some concerns about Taijuan Walker. I've always had some concerns about Taijuan Walker, and I feel good about Ranger Suarez. We talked about him last week, right? And look, you go month by month last season, a little bit inconsistent, but we sort of know what he is. There's like a baseline of, hey, when it all shakes out, it's going to be all right. Even if there's some starts that are blow-ups. Feel all right about Christopher Sanchez, I guess. You know, there's still some show me more element to it, but trending positively. Taijuan Walker, man, like 15 wins or whatever it was last year, gave him some innings. He put him in some holes early, and then he did a professional job of keeping them in games, and the Phillies more often than not found ways to win those games. He certainly did not live up to the contract. Now we get here this spring, and after the snub of not really getting to pitch last October, remember he went on social media, he had some cryptic messages, he was a little bit upset, kind of like, I'll show you. Here's a picture of my workout room. I'm getting after it. Watch me in 2024. Great. Well, here we are. He's behind schedule. I'm not that enthusiastic about his spot in this rotation to begin with. Can you help me feel better about this?
No, because he still hasn't pitched since the end of the regular season last year in a game. Still hasn't thrown. He hasn't thrown this spring. And we don't know when he's going to. Thompson try to give us a map out of a schedule yesterday, saying that Sunday or Monday he could potentially pitch. But the reality of it is, here's what happens. He comes into camp, right? And then he had to leave right away. I was just saying right away. I mean, he started with pitchers and catchers. But then at the end of February, he had to leave for a few days to go handle a personal matter back home. Fine. Guys do that. That happens. Whatever. Then he comes back, and he threw a live BP. And in the live BP, he felt soreness in his knee. Okay? So they shut him down for a few days. He has since thrown a bullpen. And Thompson said the bullpen was a good bullpen. Okay, fine. But they want him to throw another live BP before they put him in a game. So the hope is that he throws a live BP tomorrow. The team's going to be in Port Charlotte, which is almost 2 hours away from Clearwater. So I can't imagine they're going to send many of the starters down there. But I think most of the starters are going to stay back, and he'll probably throw a live BP here in Clearwater to most of the regulars. If that goes well, then they think Sunday or Monday he could get into a game. If he stays on this schedule, he can probably be back in time, make three starts here in the spring, 3 to 4 starts, and get back to be in that number five slot in the regular season, you know, with the off days when they need the number five starter, okay, and then maybe kind of get himself rolling at that point. But he's got to ramp it up now. Like, this is it. If he's still after Thursday, might need another bullpen, might need another whatever, he's not going to be ready to start the season. And then you got an issue, because then who's your fifth starter in the rotation?
So
that's the question.
Taiwan Walker's 31 years old. He's been around for a while, veteran guy. How important is his performance this spring? Like, he is behind schedule, so I'm not saying that he has to go out first start of the spring, show it all, look super sharp. But, like, given the uncertainty about where he's at physically, given his mediocre performance a year ago, I know we're not talking about him being a number one, number two guy here. He just has to go out there and give him, like, competitive starts and sort of piece it together, even if you're paying him to be more than that. But, like, is there a situation where he gets out there and he just looks totally baked and they just say, oh my God, like, we've got to do something about this? Because that really leads into the larger question, which is the one that I think a lot of people are still asking themselves. As every day passes and you have Jordan Montgomery out there and you have Blake Snell out there, is there a world where this team could just say, you know, we're pretty damn good, we don't have a lot of depth? Like, we can sit here and talk about Spencer Turnbull and how he, you know, opened some eyes the other day, and that's great. But, like, is that really the insurance policy that you want to have in place for a team that's trying to win the World Series? So how do you kind of see this thing playing out? I know I'm asking you a lot of things at once, but what do you need to see from Taiwan Walker to feel better about it? Is there anything he can or like can't show you that would really alter your opinion of him? And then do you think, as this delayed free agency process for these two stud arms plays on, like, can the Phillies get involved in this?
So what do I need to see from Walker? You don't want to see the first inning blowups, even in the spring, yeah. Right? I mean, so just to kind of give everybody a template, what they like to do with their starters is first time out in the spring, 2 innings. Then second time out, it's like 3 innings, 50 pitches. Third time out, 4 innings, 60 pitches. And then if you get a fifth time, the next one after that, you know, try and go 5 innings, 5 or 6 innings, probably cap you at 75. That gets you kind of ready for the first start of the season. So he's, whenever his first start is, whether it's Sunday or Monday, it's going to be 2 innings. If he goes out there in that first inning, he's throwing 91, 92 and, you know, getting smacked around, and it's the same thing that you saw a lot of last year in the regular season, it's certainly a red flag. I know it's spring training and you can hide behind, well, just working on things, whatever, blah blah blah. But if that velo is low and you're not there and guys, you know, minor leaguers are smacking you around the yard, like, that's a concern. That's sure. To me, that's a concern. That's a red flag. So I do need to see it. He doesn't need to be perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I do need to see something that's a little bit different than what we saw before, and that's really what I need to see from him. As for the Snell Montgomery thing, I don't think there's any way on God's green earth that they're in on Blake Snell.
I agree with you, by the way. I'm asking you as the man on location here talking to people, and I'll give you, I'll let you have that moment to give your intel here, but it makes no sense. I don't think that they're going to forfeit the compensation in terms of the pick. I don't think that they want to get involved with the international pool money being subtracted. It just does not, to me, fit their overall strategic path forward.
Right. And not only that, Snell's salary probably puts you over that third tier of the luxury tax, which drops you 10 picks in the draft next year, get a higher tax penalty as well. And, you know, they avoided that with Wheeler by making it an extension and not erasing this year on the contract. And you know what I'm saying? So that was a concession, I think, that Zach Wheeler and his agent made to help the Phillies for this season, is to not let the $42 million have to kick in until next year. So I don't think that the Phillies are keen to do that. And I think Blake Snell's contract, even if it's going to be shorter and lesser than maybe a lot of people thought it was going to be going into the offseason, will still put you above that number. And all those negatives aside, not to mention, look, Blake Snell won Cy Young last year. He had a decent season, but he does not throw a lot of innings. And the Phillies value guys who throw innings, right? And he does walk a lot of guys, and that's another issue that I don't think the Phillies want to have to deal with. Whereas Montgomery does not come with as much risk as far as all those things that you just talked about. And I think that the longer Montgomery goes, the more I think the Phillies can kind of hang in the conversation. I still wouldn't put them as a favorite ahead of anybody else.
Well, let me ask you this, because you alluded to the luxury tax threshold and the third one that you would cross if you do this. Certainly Montgomery would command more than what the Phillies have in terms of wiggle room. They're at 261 right now, $261 million. The third luxury tax threshold sits at 277. So they have $16 million as a barrier right now. And to me, it's like, if you're going to cross that, you cross it for a player that you believe changes everything, that takes you from pretty damn good to, hey, when you talk about the Dodgers, you better put us in the same breath right now in terms of overall talent. I just don't know, and the Braves too, obviously. I just don't know that Jordan Montgomery is that guy, and do you really want to cross that third threshold and basically give yourself no flexibility at the deadline? Because, like, how much further can they really go? Like, we want to sit here and act like it's unlimited, not my money, John Middleton's going to do everything possible to win. That's true to an extent, but this is not a team that's going to take on $300 million of salary this season either.
No, it's not. I would venture to say that if you are bringing in Montgomery, you're going to have to unload some salary as a counter. And that could be that could be Walker, right? Maybe you move off of Walker's contract. And I know you're going to say, who the hell's going to take Taijuan Walker? There are teams that would take a Taijuan Walker. And you know, at that, even at that salary. Seriously, there are, because there are some smaller money teams, right? In the sport, there's a lot of them. And if you're looking at a guy who's, you know, can get you 150 innings and just get you through the season and kind of be a middle of the rotation guy, he's going to, you know, just come in and do that. I think that there are teams that would do that still. So
yeah, he's 18 a year for the next 3 years. So he's got essentially what amounts to a 3-year, $54 million contract remaining. I hear you. I get it. As I've always said, there is value in what he does and what he has, you know, brought to them last year. But that is a deal you would like to have back.
Yeah, of course. But I think that's the answer. Like, if the Phillies were to get involved with a Montgomery, that would have to be part two of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't do one without doing the other. I think I would think you have to move on from that. And if it's not his salary, it's got to be somebody else's. I don't know who else you can move off of that you would want to move off of to make it work. I don't know if that's a possibility.
Yeah, I think you and I are in pretty much agreement here about where things stand. So let's kind of move to what is happening on the field. And, you know, you're down there, obviously, you're talking to some people, you're seeing some things with your own eyes. You know, we can sit up here and watch the games on TV and look at box scores and say, oh, this guy's having a nice little spring. This guy seems to be struggling a little bit. Any, like, big picture takeaways based on what you've seen to this point that, you know, you can and kind of lean into it and say, like, this might impact the season, or right now is it just guys getting some work?
Yeah, I think the thing that really stood out to me is how much they're really forcing Johan Rojas to bunt. And I know that seems like something super specific and something really like, really? That's what you're going to bring up as the first thing? But the reality of it is I walk in for the first time the other day, and it's really early in the morning, and they're out on that little half field and just working on bunting. And it's Rojas bunt. And it's every day it's the same thing. And then he ended one. I think he's bunted in every game so far that he's played. He finally got a beauty down Monday in Dunedin that he bunted for a hit. And if he could do that, Bob, once a week in the regular season, you're talking getting 25 more hits, right? Or 25 hits over the course of a season. If he could do that, he could be a 240, 230, 240 hitter and be an everyday center fielder, and you have no worries whatsoever. And it's funny to say that that one little thing can make that big of a difference for a player, but it really can with his speed, because all of a sudden he bunts for a hit, he steals second base, now all of a sudden he's in scoring position, you got Schwarber leading off behind him, and all of a sudden you can drive him in. So there's a lot to glean from just that one thing, because he's not swinging the bat well. And that's the thing that I think everybody wanted to watch and everybody wanted to see. So if you're not swinging it well, you got to find other ways to get on base. If he can find a way to do that, I think he's okay. If he doesn't and can't do it with consistency, I'm still not convinced that he's 100% on the roster opening day. I'm like 85% there that he is, but there is an element to the way things have gone so far to make me go, I don't know. Playing a lot of Christian Pache out there too.
Yeah, they sure are. They sure are. He's what, 4-for-15 this spring, 2 homers. I like Christian Pache. I don't know. People are probably listening to this and they're saying, okay, man, Christian Pache, sure. Like, if he's on the roster, fine. If he's not, no big deal. I just look at him and go, I know what level of prospect he was, 5 years ago. He's 25 years old. He is good defensively. Maybe Rojas is a step better. But for as much as we talk about Johan Rojas being this plus defender and he only needs to hit 230 and it works for you, Christian Pache is pretty damn good too. I just wonder about overall upside, and kind of parting ways with that guy right now. I wouldn't be thrilled about that.
No, I don't. And I'm not convinced that they do, because here's a conversation I was having yesterday. If you're the Phillies and you're trying to figure out that final bench spot, right? And you're saying, well, you got to assume it's going to be a left-handed bat. Right. Because they have, Stubbs is your backup catcher, but your other two guys are going to be Sosa and Merrifield, and they're both right-handed. So you got to have a left-handed bat off the bench. And my response is this: other than Rojas, assuming he makes the team, let's say, he figures it out, he's going to be your starting center fielder. Other than Rojas, are you pinch hitting for any right-hander in the lineup?
Yeah.
I don't see it. Like, you're not pinch hitting for any other right-hander. So what difference does it make if you have another lefty off the bench? So to me, and if
it's a great point.
Yeah. And if it comes down to where you need to bat for Johan Rojas, are you upset if Whit Merrifield's the guy that's pinch hitting for him? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm cool with it. So to me, the value in Pache as a defensive replacement, as a starter against lefties, as a pinch runner, because he can run the bases well too, is far more valuable than what a middling left-handed bat brings to you. So that's why I think Pache actually is the last guy who makes this team.
What else are you seeing? I mean, to be honest with you, I always want to get you here this month. I always want to talk about one thing about the regular season, because for me, honestly, like, if I'm listening to this show, I'm listening to a Phillies podcast. Yeah, like, tell me what's going on. How should I feel about the Zach Wheeler thing? What are we concerned about? What are we liking? Great. Cool. Keep me up to date in the real-time events. But I want to start talking about the regular season. I'm mentally – you're in Florida. I'm 3 weeks ahead. I'm March 28th right now. I'm 3 weeks from tomorrow. That's where I'm at mentally. So, is there anything else that you want to kind of hit on about what you've been, told, what you're seeing, anything like that before I sort of turn the page forward?
No, really. I mean, the guys are just getting work. I mean, there is, you know, there's been a bad stomach bug that's gone through the clubhouse pretty much. Cody Clemens and Nick Castellanos were both scheduled to be in the lineup and both had to be pulled out because they had a stomach
issue.
Nothing
to do with the Raising Cane's, just to be clear here.
They were not even in the building yesterday, so they didn't get the Raising Cane's. Although we did see, I don't know if you saw that video on Crossing Broad that they put up with the least favorite foods. And Schwarber and Castellanos both said sea urchin. So maybe they ate some sea urchin that went bad and that's been going through the locker room. But it's been, you know, a lot of guys have been getting sick. So I think that there's been that. It's a real medical ward in there right now. So health has got to be something that's important. One thing I will say is you got a couple guys who pitched yesterday who the Phillies have, you know, we're happy with, and you know, these are recent additions, and that was Max Castillo came in and pitched three strong innings yesterday. Michael Mercado came in and pitched, and boy, did he throw hard, man. He throws 98, 99, just nastiness. And if he's got control, which has been his issue in the past, he's tough. I mean, he's a tough guy to get. So you look at those two guys, and I sit there and say, keep an eye on those names. They may not break camp with the Phillies, but I have a feeling those two guys are going to be called upon at some point to be part of the Phillies in 2024 and pitch some important innings for them.
I guess maybe we can do a quick prospect check-in. There's two guys that get talked – well, three guys that get talked about. Obviously, Andrew Painter's not someone that we really can dial in on at this point, but you do have Griff McGarry and you have Nick Abel. I know that Griff McGarry the other day had one hell of an outing. He talk about a guy that has just gotten completely derailed. We were talking about him potentially working in a relief role at some point last year at the major league level. That doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon, huh?
Yeah, it was so weird because he had a good outing the other day before I got here. I think he struck out the side, if I remember correctly. Then Monday in Dunedin, gets the first guy, looked good. Then there was a walk, a hit by pitch, three hits and another walk, and his day was over. And it was like, it just, you know, snowballed on him. And so I wonder how much of it is just getting caught up in his own head at this point of, oh my God, here we go again. You know what I'm saying? Like if, as long as things are going well, he looks okay. And then all of a sudden it goes sideways for him. I saw him sitting down with Caleb Cotham, the pitching coach, you know, going over some reports and things like really, and Caleb was really like a teacher going through it. Like this was what this means. And this is what this means, like kind of diving into that stuff. And I think that's something that could really help him a little bit. We'll see at his next outing, if anything changes, but yeah, I think that the shine is off of that star at this point, as far as the Phillies are concerned.
And, you know, I think Nick Abel sort of underwhelmed to a degree. I thought that, you know, I think that the perception was that he was going to have this like meteoric rise, like he was going to go right through the system and be here. Hasn't quite worked out that way, but what are the early returns on him so far this spring?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, he had his first appearance was pretty good. Second one was just okay. Like, I think it's just kind of like, you know, he's slowly getting to where he needs to get to. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be part of the team early in the season, but I do think that if he continues progressing in the right direction, that, you know, if you need a spot start in July or August, you know, he could finally get the call up then and give it a shot. But I'm not certain that this is something that he still needs, you know, 15 more starts in minor leagues before we really think about it.
Right. Okay. All right. So let's look forward here a little bit. We're about 3 weeks out. As I said, I would like to ask you this. You know, I'm not going to pin you down on win totals and, you know, give me your World Series predictions or anything like that. But I do want to know, I assume, is it fair to say that you have the Phillies as one of your six playoff teams at this point in the National League? Is that true?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I mean, they're right there with Atlanta and LA, I mean, in my mind. So, yeah.
Okay. So the one place we, I think, can go to without – getting too deep into this is, give me your National League playoff teams right now.
That's a good question. I mean Atlanta, Phillies, Dodgers are the three that are guaranteed, and then it gets interesting after that. The Central is going to be interesting because I think that it's once again going to be wide open for a lot of teams. part of me thinks that this is the year that Cincinnati breaks through, and so I'll pick them, but I'm not doing that with like super confidence. Like I think right now, I still got to watch a little bit more and look around a little bit more. But I think Cincinnati is a team that sticks out to me as an NL Central champion contender. And then it's that, you know, look, we did this last year, right? And I remember we were talking about a bunch of teams that are going to be in the mix for those wild cards. And we talked about the Cubs and we talked about the Diamondbacks, believe it or not. If you recall, we did say that they would be in the mix. We didn't think they would be the team that went to the World Series by any stretch of the imagination. But I think both of those teams will be in the conversation again. And I think San Diego will have a little bit of a bounce back. And I honestly think that the Mets will be in the conversation a little bit as well. So somewhere in there, we're going to get a couple wild card teams.
I kind of feel like that Padres team, and listen, I know they didn't make the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
I know they're in the NLCS the year before against the Phillies. The Padres sort of give me Cowboys vibes, where you look at it and you're like, oh, wow, look, the Padres. Like, I just don't believe in that team.
That's fine. If I had to right now, and I know I didn't mention the Marlins, and they were a playoff team last year, but I think that they took a slight step backwards. Okay. If I had to pick two of those teams I just mentioned right now, I would go with the Padres, and I would probably go with the Diamondbacks. I think that they made some nice additions in the offseason to try and repeat what they did a year ago. I'm still not in love with their pitching.
So we're getting three teams out of the West. Like, you believe in the NL West this year?
Well, I think the Central is weak, right? And so three teams is going to come from either the East or the West. And I just think that the third team in the West is probably a little bit better than the third team in the East.
I have a feeling I know what you're going to say to this, but you look at the odds, and obviously the Dodgers are an overwhelming favorite to win the West, minus 450, next closest to the Diamondbacks at plus 800. Look at the Central. The Cardinals and Cubs, both plus 185 to win.
Yeah.
So they're co-favorites with the Reds sitting there. So I like this. If you're listening to this, Anthony is actually very good at picking division winners, looking at futures markets. There is significant value that you can get Anthony Sanfilippo's NL Central winner. We're plus 340 right now.
Yeah, I think that this might be the, you know, you look around the league for that team that always takes that next big step the next year, yeah, right? Sure. And I thought that I think that the Reds are that team in the National League that, you know, vaults themselves into the conversation in some capacity. You know, if you want to look at, I mean, I don't want to go into deep dive in the American League yet, but I think that like a Kansas City could be that kind of team in the American League, right? Kind of surprise people a little bit, come out of nowhere and be a decent team. Not, you know, they might be last year's Reds where they're good until the end and then they fall off. But I think that that's a team that you kind of look at in the same vein, that could be a surprise team in baseball. So, yeah, I think that the Reds could pull it out. I'm not in love with what the Cubs and Cardinals did
in
the offseason.
I agree.
Yeah.
Listen, I have one more interesting little note here as I'm looking around at these markets and everything. The Braves over-under win total right now, DraftKings, is set at 101.5. And I think we referenced this in one of the shows a week and a half or 2 weeks ago. Phillies is 90.5. So you have an 11-game gap there.
Yeah.
And that's probably warranted based on recent history. You know, Braves have essentially finished roughly 15 games ahead of the Phillies last two regular seasons. What's interesting, though, to me is that when you go into the division winner market, the Braves are minus 240 to win the division. The Phillies are plus 310 right now. Given that there's an 11-game gap on the win totals, like that minus 240 number does not scream clear-cut division winner at this point. Like, that gap is a little bit closer than I think people realize.
Yeah, if you ask me right now on the over-unders, I would go under Braves, over Phillies. It's not to say I'd pick the Phillies and win the division. Not there yet. But I think that the Braves will have fewer than 100 wins, and I think the Phillies will have more than 90. So
that's very interesting, I will say. I mean, I think I'm with you on that. I think I agree with that. Just so we can put that into perspective, minus 240 is, and I wonder if you would agree with this. If you look at like implied probability, those odds suggest roughly a 70% chance. So the odds makers right now are saying we got the Braves with roughly a 70% chance to win this division. Do you go for that? Does that feel about right to you?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. Yeah.
All right. You want to hit one last thing here before we wrap it up?
Yeah, and this kind of relates a little bit to the Phillies, but a couple of big name pitchers who we discussed last year at the end of the season as, you know, the Phillies should go out and try and get this guy. Maybe the Phillies should go get this guy. Maybe the Phillies should look at this guy. Are going to be injured. One's going to miss the start of the season. The other looks like may miss the season. Sonny Gray in St. Louis. He's hurt, probably going to miss opening day. Who knows when he'll be back. The bigger one, Boston's only major acquisition of the offseason, Lucas Giolito, looks like he's going to miss the entire year. So maybe the Phillies dodged a little bit of a bullet there. But more interestingly, and there was a story on ESPN that they put out. I think it was, I don't know if it was late last night or early this morning, whenever it was. I was up early and I was reading it about injuries and the DL. And the teams that use the DL more than other teams do. And the Phillies are one of the lowest, IL, I should say, sorry, injured list. They use it less than almost any team in baseball. I think that they ranked, let me look it up here. They're in what they call tier three, below average IL use. And they're down there with a bunch of small, like lower market teams, other than Texas, really is the only other big market team that's down there. Big money when I say that. But the teams that use the IL the most, Yankees, Tampa Bay Rays, which we know about their pitching woes, the Dodgers, who we think manipulate the IL usage, the Braves, the Twins, and the Astros. It's interesting, right, that the teams that do well use the IL more than the teams that don't do well. The bottom teams, right, here's the teams that use it the least. Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Texas, which is the one outlier, Arizona, Washington, and Oakland.
And that's just a product of not wanting to bring guys up, not wanting to pay major, like how service time, like what is the, how do you interpret that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's just, I think there are teams that use it to their advantage. Like we mentioned the Dodgers, right? For example, who want to just constantly say, okay, oh, this guy's hurt. Put him on a 10-day, call up another guy. That way you're keeping arms fresh and you have everybody ready to go for the postseason. And so they overuse the IL. Whereas teams that are in a full-fledged rebuild or just flat-out stink, they might be willing to let their young players go up there and just play, man. Just play, get through it, get your experience, you know, earn your lumps, and then you'll be better for it down the line. So I think that there is that element to it, right? And I think that that's probably why there's that kind of disparity. The Phillies fall into what their third tier, which is below average IL usage. And so that's probably the largest group of the tiers that they put together. But I just find it interesting that it's the teams, the big money teams and the teams that are competitive have used the IL more than anybody else. And, I, other than Tampa, who we know that their pitchers get arm injuries out the wazoo, I wonder just how much of it is actual injury and how much of it is manipulation.
And it sounds like you have a story to chase down while you're down there. Dig into this. You need to talk to some Phillies people and see what the deal is here.
Yeah. It's a good one, right?
Yeah. I like that.
It's an interesting little topic. I don't know. I saw it and I was like, that's something.
Hey, and then how long are you down there for? Another week. Boots on the ground here.
Another week. I'm here another week. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if we're going to talk again this week. It might be early next week. I'm not sure. We'll figure it out. We'll keep the listeners guessing. But thanks for tuning in to Crossed Up. Follow Anthony on X. I'm just calling it X now. I cringe every time I do it, but I've transitioned over to calling it X. Yeah. So you can follow Anthony there at AntSamPhilly. You can follow me at Bob_Wankel on X as well. Make sure that you're checking us out on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere that you get your shows, and we will talk to you soon.